Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and I am very excited about today. I am a big ocean fan, and I think part of it's because I'm Pisces, and I just tend to relate to fish really well, which is probably the weirdest thing I've said all day. But anyway, I am interviewing Julie Anderson, who is Executive Director of Plastic Oceans, that's working to clean up the oceans and get the plastic out of it. So I'm really excited about this episode. Thanks for tuning in, and I just want to get started. So that's what I'm going to do. So, Julie, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I found your website, and I'm fascinated with what you guys do, and I'm really excited to share it with the listeners.
Fantastic. Thank you. We really appreciate it, and that's our first step to solving this huge problem is raising awareness. So I really appreciate you getting that out.
Thanks. And it's definitely something, like, I used to live on a small island in the Bahamas where there were no tourists at all. And it was really interesting because we'd have cruise ships that showed up basically like in the 90s, and you could see them like on the horizon line. And that's when all kinds of plastic garbage started showing up. And so I've been conscious of just ocean pollution for a long time, but I feel like it's happening so much more now that I'm really excited to just talk about this and learn about this. So if it's okay with you, can we just get started on questions?
Absolutely.
Great. All right. So we're talking about ocean pollution and specifically plastic in the oceans. How does it all get there?
It gets there predominantly. The main source of plastic pollution is from Asia, and that's mainly because they don't have waste management systems. So a lot of it just gets washed out to the seas, like you mentioned about islands. So on these islands like the Philippines, islands off of Indonesia, China, they just goes directly into the water systems. And then what happens is that this plastic gets into the currents of the ocean,
mm-hmm.
get into these gyres, what they call. We only have a few of them in the world, and
wow.
They just pool around and they swish all of the plastic from Asia, and it'll make its way over here to the U.S. It'll make its way over to Europe. So it really is a global problem, regardless of who is creating the problem.
Totally. So it kind of takes everybody to pitch in to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you guys finding?
We're finding it's all types of plastic. Predominantly, I mean, you have water bottles, plastic bags,
mm-hmm.
food wrappers, a lot of things that we eat is really the main source of plastic waste and eat and drink. And then there's obviously the things that we forget, but disposable flip-flops and
mm-hmm.
toys, Legos, things are all washing ashore everywhere. And then what's affecting a lot of the animal life are six-pack containers, plastic bags, the
mm-hmm.
fishing nets, the plastic fishing nets that animals are getting entangled in.
Mm.
It's devastating.
Yeah, I mean, I know about the rings because I lived in Florida for a while, so everybody's really cautious about cutting those up so that the animals don't get caught in them or don't eat them. And the bags is just a whole... I mean, when I heard about the fact that a lot of animals think when they see one of these plastic bags that it's a jellyfish and they're like, great, dinner! I mean, it broke my heart. It was just like, no. And there's so much more of it now. That, you know, coming from an animal aspect on the show, it's like the ocean is obviously crucial and there's so much life in there. But it's just like, it's just so frustrating to hear it on my end, you know?
Exactly. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating for all of us.
I mean,
because it is something that we could easily remedy. We could remedy a lot of our waste by reusable bags, with just saying no to a straw, and plastic water bottle. A lot of our water bottles are just easily replaced with a reusable bottle. We can go through so much reduction in the plastic waste just by some simple behavioral changes.
Totally. And I mean, how long, I know there's a million different kinds of plastics, but like how long does it typically take plastic to break down?
We don't know, and it was really the bottom line. It changes based on where it's located. So if it's getting caught up in certain currents, and the sun is beating down on the plastic harder, and the different salt levels, it will break down faster. Mm-hmm. But in theory, the very first piece of plastic ever created is still on Earth in some form.
Oh my God!
And it always, because at the end of the day, all it does is it just breaks up into these smaller and smaller microplastics, what they're calling them. And microplastics are small enough in size that compete with microorganisms.
Oh my God!
And just tiny, and they still hold the same toxic chemicals that are found in plastic. And that's what makes it even more devastating. I mean, the plastic bag is bad enough, but then if it breaks down into millions and billions of tiny particles, it's that much more devastating.
Yeah, I found something online recently of like, I don't even know how they're used. This is terrible. I really, obviously, really paid attention to this article, but it was basically these balls that are being made. I don't know if they're being released in the ocean, but they pick up all these microparticles of plastic.
But they're hoping, there are studies and people are testing because plastic has an affinity to other plastic. It's sort of the hydrophobic quality of oil-based plastic. Uh-huh. Maybe it could you could actually use plastic itself to maybe attract other plastic, is the theory.
Oh, cool.
We haven't had any like fully successful developments, but it's a nice working theory, and we encourage all solutions and ideas to be pushed forward to try to solve this problem.
Totally, totally. And I mean, like, how much plastic is in the oceans at this point? Do you guys have any idea?
Well, we say that it's, again, that's also hard to quantify, but you know, we make about 300 million tons of plastic a year, and 8 million tons of plastic is estimated that goes into the ocean.
Oh, my God.
And that's just a year. And again, that could be bags, and that one bag or that one bottle breaks up into billions of other smaller microplastics that are eaten up by the microorganisms and so forth, get right into that food chain. So really, whether it's 8 million tons or 800 million tons, we're talking about a devastating amount of plastic already in our oceans.
It's unbelievable. I mean, and like, you know, everybody I would assume by now has seen that like massive patch of plastic that I think's in the middle of the Pacific. And I don't remember I think it's something like, you know, it's miles and miles and miles across. And what my question is, I mean, I feel like this is the stupidest question in the world. How deep is that mass?
Well, here's where it's a little bit of a misnomer of this island, because this plastic garbage patch, it creates this image that it's an island that you can go and carry it away in some form.
Mm-hmm.
But what it's happening, it's... They call it a patch because of the gyres, the circulation of the currents.
Uh-huh.
It's actually pooling a lot of plastic in that area, and that's why they're calling it a patch. But what's happening, because of this current, it's really breaking all that plastic up, turning it into this soupy mess, this plastic soup. So it can be as thick as 3 feet or 1 meter deep of oily substance. Because plastic is made up of petroleum oil, it is, when it breaks down, it becomes this oily muck in the sea.
And so do you know if plastic is in the sea for a while and it becomes this oily muck, will it like eventually turn into almost like a tar or anything like that that'll like wash up, or is that just a whole different thing?
It hasn't at this point. I mean, I guess with enough waste, I guess it could.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be able to comment on how it would eventually pool up. I mean, it would be nice if it would pool together so we could actually take it out
totally.
in one form. But what's happening, it's just dispersing. And we have a massive ocean out there, and you have these particles everywhere and plastics everywhere. It's just how do you collect it all?
And so what does plastic do to coral reefs?
And as we know, coral reefs are animals, living mm-hmm. creatures, and since they do break up into these microplastics, they already contain the toxins used, the chemicals used to make plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And they also these microplastics, they act like magnets to other chemicals and toxins that are found in the ocean. So they become these little poison pills. And we have in our film, A Plastic Ocean, you do see microorganisms actually eating these microplastics.
Mm.
And on the same level, the coral reefs are able to eat these plastics and these microplastics, ingesting the toxins, affecting them, and then poisoning them.
Oh, God.
Killing off our reefs that way.
Well, it makes sense, you know. It's, wow. So actually, yeah, I wanted to talk about your film a little bit. Could we discuss that?
Yeah.
Cool. So tell us about it.
Okay. The Plastic Ocean, it was conceived 8 years ago by our founders, Sonia Norman and Joe Ruxton. And the idea was that they recognized this was a huge problem then, and they wanted to start solving the problem. They realized in order to start solving a problem of this magnitude on a global scale, you needed to really deliver a clear message of this global problem. This is not a problem that is just in the backyard of a small little country.
Yeah.
It's a problem that is affecting everybody globally. And we wanted to create a film that would be able to deliver that. So it, over 8 year period, went around the world tracking plastic, seeing it from different levels, seeing how plastic does affect all of our lives differently,
mm-hmm.
and how solutions are going to vary from country to country.
Mm-hmm. You
know, so for countries like the Philippines, where they do not have waste management, nobody's picking up their rubbish, nobody's recycling it, they're going to have a different solution to their problem than I would here in Los Angeles.
That's a really good point.
Yes, exactly. And so we released our film in January of this year, and mm-hmm. we've had an amazing response to it in terms of festival runs, and we've had an incredible response by the UN, the United Nations,
cool.
by state departments, people who want to use this to educate their staff as well as try to get it within their countries to educate and so they could start focusing on solving the problem.
Well, congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we just screened our educational shorter version of the film at the UN Oceans Conference on World Oceans Day.
Cool.
Fantastic.
Oh, my God, that's so exciting.
Exactly.
That's amazing. So what got you into this?
I live in Los Angeles now, but I was living in Hong Kong for 10 years, and I was shocked by, when I was living in Hong Kong, there mm-hmm. was a container ship that was holding these, they call them nurdles, and those are the pre-production pellets. They come in little beads of plastic that are used as, are sold to all the different manufacturers that make plastics.
Mm-hmm.
They take these little beads, melt them into whatever plastic product they're creating, and during a typhoon in Hong Kong, this massive ship of containers of holding these pre-production pellets spilled over into the ocean,
and
billions and billions of these little nurdles, plastic production pellets, washed up on shore.
Oh,
I mean, they washed into the sea, and the sea, or the shoreline, not far from where I was living in Hong Kong, but the sea looked like the coast looked like it had been snowing.
Oh my God!
And you could see this in the film. And I just remember when I wasn't even sure they were going to put that in the film, but I remember seeing this. And what was so shocking to me was how the owners of it was Sinopec, an oil company, a Chinese oil company. They had no responsibility to go and clean it up because it's not considered a hazardous substance. It's not like oil, even though they're made up of mostly oil.
Yeah.
Because it's not considered hazardous, they don't need to go and clean it up.
Well, that's helpful.
And it's, I just thought, oh, that it's just wrong. Somebody needs to fight to have plastic considered hazardous when it enters the ocean.
Yeah.
It kills our, you know, it kills our animals. It gets into our food chain, and that's where my passion was driven and was started there.
I think, wow. I mean, that's just staggering to think about. You know, that image is just like, oh my God, it's
exactly.
Crazy. And like with, I mean, this is something too, because I know that, you know, in the big picture, plastic's pretty recent. So I don't even know if there are any long-term studies of what happens to people if they're eating fish that has been ingesting microplastic its entire life, you know, like
exactly.
What this is going to do to us.
There hasn't been, and only recently has more and more studies started to occur with microplastics, but we really do not know the long-term effects on humans. And it really it comes down to the toxins that are held in those plastics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's the plastic itself that's dangerous if it accumulates in our body, but it's the toxins that these plastic carry and absorb. They get into our bodies, and then they migrate to even the fatty tissue.
Perfect.
And what happens when those bioaccumulate? What's the effect of that? And what's the effect in animals even? It happens in a fish. It happens in the mammals. I mean, more and more we're seeing in the news how dolphins and whales are washing up on shore with incredible amounts of toxicity in their system.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. There was, I think, a whole bunch of whales that actually just beached recently. I don't remember where, but it was enough that it made the news. And it was just like, this is really, really bad.
Yeah, and I just a second whale this year that died because of ingesting just plastic itself, let alone the toxic chemicals from it. They just... You know, they open up their mouths and they take in all this food. They take in all the netting and the plastic tarps and bags and everything that come with it.
This is such a hardcore goal that you have. I really, really respect the fact that you're doing this because, honestly, I don't know if I could do this every day. I mean, it's one hell of a fight that you're putting up right now. I really respect what you're doing, and I want to do whatever I can and have my listeners do whatever we can to help you because, I mean, you're absolutely right. This is an issue that affects every single human being on the planet.
Exactly. And plastic is, I mean, it's a relatively new product in the sense of how much we consume it.
Yeah.
And I mean, even 20. If you think back 40 years ago, you didn't find nearly as many water bottles. You wouldn't. You didn't have. We had paper bags more. We would use lunch boxes more often.
Yep.
And there were. I have a 6-year-old son who we go to soccer practice, and everybody brings different water bottles, Gatorade bottles. But when I was growing up, it was. You had an igloo cooler full of water, and you use little paper cups.
Totally.
And so the consumption rate has just become, it has just increased. And it's just a reflection, I think, of our disposable lifestyles. We think, oh, we can use it. Let's use it and throw it away. Use it and throw it away. And so it's a matter of just changing that a little bit. And I think it's possible. We're flexible. Humans are flexible.
Yeah. I mean, I saw something that really gave me hope. I was on Facebook, and I don't know what I was looking at, but now this one ad campaign has targeted me, so I'm seeing it, like, multiple times a day. And it's this company that's making, like, beauty products. I think it's, like, shampoos, conditioners, soaps, that kind of thing. And they're making them in little teeny tiny individual packaged plastic things.
Exactly.
And so the first thing I was like, really? Are you kidding me? And I went to the comments, and every single person that posted was like, this is so unbelievably wasteful. This is so stupid. We don't need any more plastic. I was like, all right. Like, people are starting to pay attention. So
that's
that gave me some hope.
I mean, absolutely.
I feel bad for the company, but it's also like, really, guys? Come on, you know?
Exactly.
Crazy. So we need to take a quick break for station identification. I am speaking to Julie Anderson, who's the executive director of Plastic Oceans. We'll be back in about a minute, minute and a half, so stay tuned.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledged the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
And we are back. I'm talking to Julie Anderson all about her organization, Plastic Oceans, which she happens to be the executive director of. So, Julie, I want to ask you about Plastic Oceans, actually. What do you guys do?
Excuse me. We've just released this film, so that is taking up, that's our primary project right now, is really getting the word out there, using this film as to inspire and educate people on the use of plastic, and we are using the film into getting it into schools. We're partnering up with different state departments, government level offices throughout the world. This is a global project that we're doing, and using this as a tool to deliver the problem, so that we can start focusing on the solutions on different community levels. Because the solutions are going to vary from community to community, it's really getting everybody on board to agree on what the problem is so that we can effectively start focusing on the solutions.
I'm really impressed that you've got governments paying attention. I mean, have you had any pushbacks from anybody that's been like, oh, we're fine, you know?
Or it's been incredible. If
awesome.
Anything, we've gotten, I don't know if it's just the timing, and everybody, as you said, the problems of plastic has been around for decades, but people seem to be receptive to it right now. They're starting to see it, and I think it's because we actually see it everywhere now. Even you can't go on holiday anywhere and not see it. Even if you are landlocked and you live near a river or a lake, or you go skiing, you see it. You see plastic waste in your rivers, in the lakes.
Totally.
In the most remote areas around the world, you're going to see plastic is going to be coming up because of the currents.
It makes me nuts because I'm a big beachcomber. I'm big in my shells and stuff like that. And, I mean, I'm sitting here beachcombing, like, these little tiny coves in the middle of nowhere, mostly around New York, and it's like, oh, what's that? Oh, it's plastic. Crap. You know, it's just like there's so much of it out there.
Exactly. And it is, and it's bringing that, and for a lot of countries, the part of it, what we're educating using the film is we're educating countries in Asia, countries in South America that still perceive plastic as not hazardous. They see it the same type of pollutant as maybe glass, but the thing is glass will break down and go back to nature eventually. Mm-hmm. And there are no toxic chemicals, but it is really educating and teaching people about the harmful effects of plastic, especially now that we know that it is breaking down and the chemicals that are found in it are toxic to us and animals. And that's what we're really just pushing to do with the foundation right now.
God.
On a global level.
I mean, it's so cool that people are paying attention to you. That gives me a lot of hope because this topic is so, so massive. And you're right. I mean, I dare anybody to go somewhere on a coast and not find a piece of plastic either on the beach or in like the high tide line or in the dunes. Because it's there, sadly.
And there's so many. The other reason why a lot of, I think, government officials are getting involved, because they see, especially along the coast, people who are dependent on the fishing industry.
Yeah.
And if you see these chemicals, if you see your fish dying, or you actually see the plastic pellets in their guts.
Oh, God.
It devastates their economy and their food source. The ocean provides most of the food protein source in the world.
Yeah.
And when it starts being affected, how are we going to make up for that economically? And that's where I think governments are starting to
Good.
Get wary.
Well, I mean, you'll love this. This is actually really cool. It was like in the mid-80s or so, in the same island that I was living on, and really, like, really not populated, like, no tourism. Like, the island just, it just doesn't work, and but homeowners and things like that. And there was a guy, the big things that used to come up were always, like, Playtex tampon applicators. I mean, those were everywhere. It was almost like some new brand of shell. It was like, really? Which is just so gross. And then casino cups from the cruise ships that we saw. And so one guy who was living down the beach just had it. He walked out one morning and it was like hundreds of those cups that you get when you gamble and for your chips, you know? And it had the logo of the cruise line on it and all these applicators and like all this junk that was obviously dumped off this ship because it all came up at the same time. So this guy actually packaged it all up in this giant, disgusting box and shipped it to the CEO of that company who actually did receive it and opened it and sent back a letter like, oh my God. And it was like this huge victory for everybody for like 2 or 3 months. And actually the garbage reduced. And then after a period of time, then it just started coming back again, you know? And it's like, cruise ships and things like that really need to take responsibility for the garbage that their people bring on, and dumping it at the sea, you know, just like, oh, into the ocean, we need space, is not it, you know? It was horrifying to see this stuff.
Oh, that's horrible. And it is, and that's, we've been trying to partner more with yachting companies, you know, yacht
cool.
industries, and working, trying to work with the cruise lines to, one, educate using, educate them, as well as keep following up on them, that they are making a real change when they implement no plastic on there, no plastic water bottles or refill stations, or that they actually follow through and they consider. So that's really where not only trying to educate, but we're also trying to just keep pushing and being that annoying, that nag to keep people going.
Well, what is it? See, people have to hear or see something 5 to 7 times before
exactly.
it sinks into their head, you know?
Exactly.
And then it's like, I thought it up all by myself. It's like, yes, you did, and you're a genius. Now do something about it, you know?
Exactly.
It's fine. Take the credit. I don't care. Let's just make a change here.
Exactly.
So what's your ultimate goal for Plastic Oceans?
Ultimately, I mean, we have the lofty goal that we would get people to rethink. We'd like the world to start rethinking,
nice.
Changing their attitudes towards plastic. Start seeing it as not something that's disposable.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that it may be reusable, but we need to really rethink how we use plastic. Right now, we just think it's something that disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's about getting people to rethink about that, start reusing, not thinking it's disposable.
Yeah.
It's also, we have the next level of making people rethink. It's also seeing it not as garbage. It is, it's actually something of value.
Yeah.
It's made out of 30% of plastic products are oil, and 15% of the oil used in this oil from the world's oil amount is used towards plastic.
Oh my God.
And it's, there's money there. I mean, last year alone, it was $100 billion industry.
Holy
for
cow!
Plastic, for just single use plastic.
Oh my God!
That's not even getting into car parts and you know.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if we start seeing value in that, in this product, rather than it being something that's thrown away,
mm-hmm.
we can start making new materials, turning that into new money that is sustainable. That's better for the environment. So we're not just asking people, it's nice that people have behavioral changes, but we also realize in order to really have an impact, we need to start shifting it so that it is sustainable, that there is, we're not taking away jobs. It is something that can be rethought into a new economy.
I agree with you, because it's like, it's funny. I was a graphic designer a million years ago and didn't do a lot of package design. I did, you know, here and there. And it's like, oh my God, you know, one of my favorite things in the world, if it wasn't for plastic, would be a lot of the Asian package design, because it's so complex. But then it's like, with the influx of plastic, now it's like, all right, you've got that really thin plastic veneer over the box. Then you've got the box. Then you open it up and it's got some plastic thing that hold, you know, the product in place. And then you've got this. And then you've got the plastic jar or bottle. And then you open that up and there's another piece of plastic in there to keep all the stuff in the jar. So, you know, and it's just like, oh my God, are you kidding me?
Absolutely. I mean, kids' toys are packaged so much that you need like a special degree and tools in order to open some of these.
Seriously.
Level after level of plastic.
Those damn clamshells get me every time. I hate those things.
They're horrible.
They're really, it's the meanest thing in the world, I swear to God. So, I mean, I know you've been asked this 100 million times, but I know you have the right answer. So I'm going to ask you the 100 millionth the first time. What are some things that we as human beings can do to reduce our plastic consumption?
The simple ways are, we always go through, the first is to just refuse. I really hate straws. All of us know how to drink out of a cup. And straws are just the biggest waste of plastic, and we just in the U.S. alone, we go through 500 billion straws a day.
Oh my God!
And it's a crazy, crazy amount of straws.
Oh my God! Well, shout out to my friend Brittany who just got a recyclable straw out of metal. It's super cool. So those things exist. If you have to have a straw, you can find this online.
Exactly. And I'm sorry, I said billion, 500 million straws.
That's still pornographic. My God.
And these are one time thrown away.
Yep.
One time, and it just, there is no way to recycle. Most states, cities do not recycle these straws, and they're easily blown away.
Yep.
I'm sure they end up easily blown from a landfill, even, or from a rubbish bin into the ocean. I see them all the time.
Ugh.
Here on the beach. So that drives me crazy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The straws you can say no to. Plastic bags you can easily say no to.
Mm-hmm.
And bring reusable bags and reusable containers. And then finally, if it's recycle and just properly. And if you're fortunate enough to live in an area where you can recycle, make the attempt to recycle and recycle properly.
Well, I just found out something terrible, that New York actually collects plastic for recycling, but New York City supposedly does not recycle plastic, which I may be wrong on this. I pray I'm wrong, to be honest with you. But so, like, would contacting our government officials help this at all?
It does.
Okay.
It definitely helps to do it, because then they start putting a budget together so that their recycling can go in there.
Cool.
But it's if nobody shows an interest in it, there won't be any recycling. I know the reason why California tends to have better recycling is because people keep demanding it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's far from perfect in California, so it's expensive, and it's a tough industry because of.
Yeah.
Making new plastic is actually cheaper than recycling.
Oh, my God. I know someone who's an industrialist, and we had a huge fight recently, like a couple years ago, actually. And it was like, they are making virgin product. And I was like, why don't you recycle? And he's like, because virgin product is cheaper by a penny a ton. And I was like, are you serious? And it's like, well, you know, it adds up in the long run. I was like, you know, I'll give you $50. How about that? Okay, does that make it even? Like, come on, you know?
Exactly. It is that awareness and trying to push people to realize that it's some of the savings like that. I mean, surely our environment, our planet is worth it.
You would think. I mean, and it's, you know, just this level of capitalism of where you know, more money, more money, more money. And it's like, well, quality of life, healthy planet, kind of worth a dime, you know, like it's just sad to me. And it was so interesting because the person that had been doing this for so long, that their whole concept and their whole reason of being was that bottom line. You know, and I was like, come on. And I gave him enough hell that he was finally like, you know, if I went to my bosses and I said this to them, they'd either laugh me out of the office, they'd probably fire me. He's like, they don't care. And it's like, well, that's the problem right there.
Yeah, and that's where we are trying to make that difference, is trying to get people to care. And that was the reason behind the film, is to use that impact, really get that imagery out there, to get people to see it on different levels, to get people to care. Because it is easy for us to just ignore it, because
mm-hmm.
we just don't care, or we don't feel a connection to it. So we continue to hope to use media and imagery, and I'm excited to see that other people, there are lots of groups coming up with different small short videos and different artists coming up with different uses of plastic to really start to make it a connection for people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's starting to work a little bit. I mean, and kids are always great too, because kids find this stuff out and they go home like rabid telling their parents. And,
oh,
you know, just
we've
like.
We had the most success because of kids. And we really target the younger students because not only do they have great ideas and they have they're inspired to either take existing plastic and recycle it in some way or reuse it in some way or turn it into art or but they are the most effective change makers in terms of getting back to their parents, their grandparents, and changing their habits at home. I mean, I can preach till I'm blue in the face, and often people, whatever. But when their kids do it and put the pressure and educate their families, huge impact.
Oh, my God. Well, the guilt level of, like, some little kid being like, you're a terrible person, because you're like, oh, God, you know, it's like, I have to do something about this. I mean, it's really, like, it's been used. There's a bunch of different programs that have been on the show that are basically, like, hitting up the kids. Because everyone's discovered it's like, you know, get the kids on the ride, and then the parents are just kind of dragged on whether they want to be or not.
We had a screening of the film and a talk in Singapore, in a school in Singapore, and they were eighth graders. And within 6 weeks of watching the film, they had banned all plastic water bottles and drinks in their school. They had raised enough money to put two refill stations, and they had raised money for reusable bottles with their school logo for every student.
Oh, my God.
And they clearly just went to hit up their parents, and they
totally.
Were real activists. I mean, they really went out. They were sad by the devastation that we're creating, animals dying, and they did it in 6 weeks. It was incredible.
Oh, my God. And in Singapore? I mean, that's impressive, boy.
Very. It was truly impressive, and So the power of children.
Totally. Let's work them as much as we can. Let's get this out with them, you know?
Exactly.
And so for people that want to know more about Plastic Oceans or they want to see the movie, where can they find you?
They can email me at julie@plasticoceans.org, or they can just go to the website, plasticoceans.org.
Perfect. And it's a beautiful website. Oh, my God. I was like, this is really gorgeous. Yeah, you guys,
we're also trying to stay on the positive side. We don't want people to be discouraged that plastic is devastating, but we're confident that we can change this, that there are solutions.
Mm-hmm.
The ocean's worth protecting. It's beautiful. We all depend on it. And so we really wanted to convey that.
One last, we're almost out of time, but there is one question that I'm dying to ask you that I'm hoping you'll have an answer for. It was like, I mean, I don't even want to say this word to you because I feel like you're just going to be like, ugh. But like, okay, ready? Microbeads.
Microbeads. These things are terrible. But these, they're found in our facial products. They're found in our toothpaste, even the toothpaste, some children's toothpaste.
Gross.
For that abrasive quality that we get in. To rub for braids.
That can't be healthy.
Scrubs for your skin, scrubs for your teeth. No, and they never, this was before when it wasn't considered toxic. It wasn't considered hazardous. And so they're still able to slip it into these products. And you often find them in some female cosmetics as well. And
totally.
So it really is pushing on a policy level to just ban them completely because they just go straight into the water system and right into the ocean.
Yeah, what devastated me was finding out about glitter and how poisonous glitter. I'm like, no, not glitter. Like, not glitter. Please, not glitter. It's like, damn it. I mean, seriously,
but
that
there's always,
me.
I mean, we need, I mean, that is the nature of human innovation. You know, we think we create something to solve one problem. But and with science and research, we learn, not so great.
Yeah, right.
And that's when we really have to change, quickly adapt and change, come up with new ways, new products.
Well, I have so much respect for you guys. I mean, really, major, major accolades. And thank you for getting pissed off in Hong Kong and creating this organization, because it really sounds like you're really, like, people are listening to you, and that's so exciting for me.
Barry, thank you so very much.
It's been my pleasure. And, you know, if I can do anything to help you guys or, like, spread the word or any of that, please let me know. I would love to keep in touch with you and do something, a follow-up in, like, a year or so and just see where you guys are and how everything's going.
Fantastic. We should hopefully be working on a second film on solutions by then.
Yay. Oh, that sounds great.
Excellent.
Cool. So, yes, thank you again. And we will be in touch. And for the listeners, thank you guys for listening, as always. I will be back next week. Actually, no, I'm lying to you. I think next week is the 4th of July, actually. So if it is, I don't know what I'm going to be doing, but I'm not going to be in the studio because we're going to be closed. So tune in 2 weeks for a new episode. Thanks for listening. If you haven't followed me on Facebook yet, please do so. It's Animal Instinct 73 is how you can find me on the search engine. I am the Food Healer, or at Food Healer on Twitter, and I am Animal Instinct Radio on Instagram. So if you want to see what I do when I'm not in the studio, that's a good place to sign up. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.